The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Money makes the world go round, the world go round, the world go round. Money makes the world go round, it makes the world go round. A mark, a yen, a buck, or a pound is all that makes the world go round. That clinking, clunking sound can make the world go round. Money, 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 money.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. I'm video streaming live from our studio in New York City over ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and broadcasting live as well. Today, an in-depth, original investigative report, Solar Storms, Katrina Times 1000, A Real Armageddon is Possible. Then my guest, who is up in Albany at this moment on all of our behalves, David Braun. He is awaiting to testify before a commission opposing gas hydrofracking. And so we're going to have him on for a few moments as well. Then the latest on health and nutrition following that. We're going to reverse order things today. And then your questions and comments and issues. And time permitting, I thought that there was a very good statement from the first official statement released by Occupy Wall Street. I commend them for it. We're certainly in support of them. And I will read that time permitting. Let us begin. I've had so many people suggest that based upon what they've seen over the internet, that either there is nothing to fear or that there's a great deal to fear. I wanted to bring a sense of scholarship and accuracy to this information that could withhold any challenge in a court of law. So after my report today, this full report will be published online at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com so you can download it at your leisure. In the 5 days leading up to Hurricane Katrina making its landfall, I issued a warning on my daily radio show advising the residents of the Gulf Coast, at least those who listen to my show from there, to evacuate their homes. I explained that the way they should do it is pack up their most valuable possessions, leave their homes behind, and get at least 50 miles north of the city, even if it meant traveling by bicycle or just walking. I also challenged the Army Corps of Engineers on the safety of the old and deteriorating levees located in and throughout the New Orleans level, meaning the level around the city, because New Orleans itself sits in what amounts to nothing more than a saucer. It is below sea level by as much as 6 feet. And for those 5 days, many people chose to remain in their homes and watch everything happen. Katrina struck Louisiana on August 29, 2005, as a Category 3 hurricane, beginning its path of utter devastation that left tens of thousands of people without homes and several thousand dead. On a trip to New Orleans' Lower Ninth Ward district, just shortly after Katrina hit, I witnessed hundreds of homes that were inundated after the nearby levees were breached during the storm. I saw holes in the roof that people had created to escape the deluge that caused the water line to reach 9 feet across all the homes. 5 minutes away in an upscale neighborhood on the other side of a golf course, the flooding was equally as overwhelming. New Orleans had become the portrait of a disaster zone. On a recent trip to the Ninth Ward in New Orleans, I discovered that the area looked as it did in 2005. The terrible damage persists to this day, and it's a testament to the late and inadequate response by local, state, and federal authorities to come to the aid of United States citizens. More than ever, we are facing unprecedented environmental disasters, ranging from harsh, record-breaking snowy winters pounding the Northeast, desiccating dry desert areas of Texas, New Mexico, and Oklahoma, powerful tornadoes demolishing towns in the Midwest and South, and record rainfall and flooding in Vermont and other areas. Over the course of just a week this past year, we saw the East Coast experience an earthquake and a hurricane simultaneously. This trend of environmental events has become the new norm, and it has coincided with our country coming down with a bad case of waiting for Katrina syndrome, a condition in which people refuse to examine the power of nature to disrupt their lives. Symptoms include ignorance and apathy over measures that could be taken to prevent calamity, and unconditional acceptance of the outright lies and propaganda doled out by government and corporate leaders. We have learned nothing since Katrina. Our decrepit water and gas systems have been around for 60 to 80 years or longer. Our roads, bridges, tunnels, and levees, dams, and dikes are in a state of abject disrepair. We have not taken the crucial step of constructing emergency facilities in every single town and city in the United States, adequate in case there is a cataclysmic event. Besides putting many people to work, several million, at gainfully employed jobs, building these facilities would provide some semblance of civility during a time of crisis. People would be able to take refuge and have access to medical clinics and food supplies. The current response network that relies on the Red Cross, FEMA, and the National Guard during times of crisis is completely inadequate. Now imagine that something could dwarf all of this. Something that could kill tens of millions of Americans and cause at least half of America to experience life as if it were living in a Mad Max film. Imagine that a gigantic mass of plasma is released from the sun and heads directly for the Earth. Even though we have been assured that we can withstand such an event, the power of this coronal mass ejection overwhelms our electric grids and fries our power substations, rendering them beyond repair. Our communication satellites are also severely damaged during the solar event and are unable to function. We are not told what has happened. When we pick up our phones, there's no dial tone. When we turn on the radio, we hear nothing. We head out to the street to ask our neighbors what has happened, but no one knows. The first inconvenience we notice is our air conditioning system is not working, and stifling heat in the warm summer day, or worse, our heat has been cut off as temperatures dip below 30 degrees if it's wintertime. We return to our homes and wait. We realize that freezers defrosting and our food will soon spoil. We turn on the water faucet, but nothing comes out. We flush our toilet, nothing happens. In suburbia, people aren't able to fill their cars at gas stations, so they head to the stores on foot, stocking up on as much as they can, batteries, candles, non-perishable food. The first night comes and goes. On day two, people begin to worry as the backup generators that were keeping power online at hospitals begin to fail. Members of FEMA and the National Guard appear in neighborhoods, and people form long lines to receive a few gallons of water. But it runs out because there are too many people. Other people pack up their cars and head out of town, only to find that highways are bumper to bumper with vehicles that have run out of gas. On day three, organized gangs start to take over neighborhoods as they break into homes and seize whatever food and water they can get their hands on. Any cash, gold, and silver they steal as a bonus. People are becoming very thirsty. And while no one is starving just yet, people begin to search for non-perishables wherever they can find them. On day five, panic ensues. Thousands of people are dying in hospitals. Everyone in emergency care is dead. Banks and pharmacies have been closed for nearly a week, and people aren't able to make any credit card transactions or get their prescriptions or medications. People can't get their hands on cash. A few FEMA water tanks that are available are beginning to dry up, and federal authorities say that they are overwhelmed by the 20 million people in the tri-state area alone who are reaching a point of desperation. The wealthy individuals living on Sutton Place Park Avenue are even worse off than others because they're preyed upon by swarms of gangs. That's where the money is. Police have abandoned their positions as they choose to protect the safety of their families first. Those who have guns do their best to protect their homes and families. On day 10, widespread dehydration sets in and takes the lives of thousands of people per day. The old and the young go first. The children die next, as helpless parents don't know what to do. They have not been prepared for this. They have no water. The only water they know of is in the river or a lake. But they also know that just like in Haiti, that will produce massive cholera. They didn't think about preparation. They never had that water purification. They thought that was kind of kooky and quackish, not hip. And, well, only the nut jobs do anything like preparation because their government was prepared. Their unions were prepared. Everybody was prepared. So they said. It turns out nobody was prepared. People are left to steal whatever they can just to survive. Law enforcement simply is non-existent at this point because they have been moved in to protect the elite. The mayor will not go hungry nor thirsty, nor the governor, nor those who are powerful enough to facilitate a small circle of protection. The mayor and the governor are doing fine as FEMA works to ensure that they are well fed and well protected. But millions of people are frantic and helplessly unprepared as society descends into a state of lawlessness. And older people that are up in buildings on the 20th or 30th floor cannot make it down to the street and walk back up again as elevators are gone. There are no traffic lights. Everyone is seen siphoning gas wherever it is possible. Then the bad news begins. We come face to face with the truth of our political choices. No one chooses to bury a year's worth of diesel fuel tanks at the Indian Point nuclear facility, so that in case the electrical grid failed, the facility could still operate on its own cooling system. Nor did anyone make the decision to put technology into place on a Marshall Plan worldwide or on a Manhattan Project plan to tell the world, let us work together. We have the brains, we have the resources, and we have the time if we rush it. No, no one thought about this. And as a result, they did not allow Indian Point to be self-sustaining. Closed-loop systems could function independent of the electrical grid. Hence, no single power plant that is of a nature that could explode, such as Indian Point, a nuclear plant, would be using their own electricity instead of sending it out to a community. The workers at Indian Point understand the crisis at hand, and they know that when the final backup generator ceases to function, it will only be a matter of 1, 2, or 3 days maximum or less before the water used to cool the spent fuel rods evaporates completely. Then it is Armageddon. Then it is unimaginable, and they know what will happen. And they can tell no one because they have no phones, and they look at each other and say, what shall we do? Should we try to walk out of here? How far can we walk? How far can we bike? Can we get to the river? Can we steal a boat? What can we do to get away? Because we know what the governor refuses to know. That this is going to be a Fukushima. The top is going to blow. This will be worse than any nuclear meltdown in world history. And 20 million Americans living within 200 miles of New York City, in Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, will die. This will be the largest, most complete genocide in world history. They realize that without the water in place, the highly radioactive spent fuel rods are at risk to explode, and that is exactly what's going to happen. You won't hear it. You won't see the explosion. But the wind, as it always does, will travel at about 12 miles an hour, and 20 million people located in the wind flow, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania and Connecticut, will get their first wave of radiation within the first 8 hours. A wave that will continue 24/7 every single day because there's no one who can fix it and no technology that can change it. It will expose every inch of land, every home, every apartment, every car, every drop of water, every inch of soil. Every building will be completely and totally inundated with ionizing radiation, from tritium to plutonium, and lots of it. Within 4 weeks, we will see millions of people, young and old, they will die en masse. There will be people with compromised immune systems, with cancer, heart disease, which is about one-third of the population with compromised immune system. They will be second to die. You won't taste it. You won't feel it. Everything will look normal. Maybe you've hoarded food. Maybe you've been able to be one of those who prepared with food and water. But you cannot prepare for the radiation. It will find you. And slowly, you will find that you begin to vomit blood. You will not be able to hold anything down. You'll begin to have blood coming out of your eyes and your ears. It doesn't matter if you're an anarchist or a communist or a Marxist or capitalist or anything. Jewish, pray all you want. Nothing's going to change this. Nothing can. This is the real world, not the mythological world that we all like to think will protect us. It doesn't, never has, and won't. And so people will say, what can we do? Surely something can be done. Too late. There'll be no help, no medicine. There is no medicine that can reverse advanced radiological poisoning. Some people will become hysterical, others just apathetic. Others just wanting the end to come quickly. Word spreads that a nuclear power plant exploded and people begin to flee on foot. The few cars that do have fuel will be commandeered as desperate people try to escape. But where to go and how far before you're out of harm's way? Wherever the wind blows is where radiation goes. We will see the beginning of an apocalypse where those 20 million people are joined by millions more who take on huge amounts of radiation. It will be a Chernobyl, an unmitigated catastrophe that claims the lives of at least one people per week. That's because Indian Point will not be the only nuclear reactor affected. The nuclear facilities in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Virginia, North Carolina are all going to be exploding at about the same time. The entire power industry thought with one mind. They denied and ignored the problem, and this is the result. Without fuel, running water, or food, and given the huge quantities of radiation saturating the environment, we could see, I predict, about 50 million Americans dead. But what about your kids? What about all the younger people? Forget you and your worthless life. Forget the fact that you're apathetic. What about the children who had no capacity to defend themselves because you chose not to do anything but be a good Democrat and a good Republican, and that's what caused this? And the union showed up because they were able to leech off the far more courageous young people on Wall Street. Where were these so-called competent unionists when it came to challenging the new CAFTA treaty or challenging and asking for a general strike across America of every union of the jobs being outsourced? Oh, they didn't do that. And what about them closing down nuclear power plants? They didn't do that either. And what about all the bailouts? They didn't do that either. And all the excuses that follow through. But at this moment, it's not about the buffoons on Fox telling us that this radiation can't happen, or John McCain and John Kerry, one from the right, one from the left, telling us that nuclear is the way to go, it's safe, it's effective, or Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, Bill Clinton, George Bush Jr., Barack Obama, all supporting of this without any allowance for the fact they could be wrong, their experts could be wrong. So what do you think when you know that you're dying and you have nowhere to go, and the people who are responsible, oh, did we forget? They're in this mountain over in Virginia that can withstand radiation because it's got all the protections. It's got unlimited water, food, radiation protection units. So the elite will live. They won't see you giving the finger. So they can have another day of power to misuse and abuse their authority. Within 3 months of this meltdown, no city within 50 miles will ever be able to be safely occupied again. It will be contaminated forever. The new American landscape will be defined by cholera and middle age epidemics, polluted water, rotting corpses in the street, and the dreaded stench of death in the air. Someone in Hollywood will think, now this is a great idea for a new reality show. Yeah, well, this is not science fiction. It's the possibility of a worst-case scenario. We're confronted with a decision. Do we put our trust and faith in the authorities as we did during Katrina? Or do we demand that the necessary precautions be taken at every nuclear plant and every energy facility to safeguard against a total collapse? This will not only play out in the United States, this same scenario will happen in every country that uses nuclear power in the world. How is it that the Federal Reserve found $16 trillion of tax-free money to give Wall Street banks, foreign countries, and Fortune 500 corporations, yet we can't find a penny to fix our aging power grids or establish emergency facilities in America's cities and towns? The most reasonable approach would be to decommission all nuclear power plants and put alternative clean energy in their place. This way, when a solar storm comes, for the first time in history, we will be prepared to confront the challenges. A best-case scenario will play out where no one will die, no one will be injured, no chaos will ensue, all because we chose to stand up now, prepare now, and demand. We don't ask anymore. Helen Collicott was right last Saturday. She said in the strongest expletives imaginable, it's time to stop being nice to these pricks in power. They're all vile human beings. All of them. That's what she said. She said nicety, being thoughtful, doesn't work, and she was right. Now, to the science. What is a solar storm? Solar storms are generated by randomly occurring numerous bursts of magnetic energy emanating by the sun. They have the potential to penetrate Earth's magnetic field and disrupt the power grids, radio communications, and satellite technology. Scientists representing agencies such as NASA inform us that we are currently experiencing a spike in solar activity characterized by stronger, more frequent solar storms. They expect that this activity will reach its peak during the next 2 years. There are two major phenomena associated with solar storms: solar flares and coronal mass ejections. Solar flares are powerful bursts of radiation that occur in response to the buildup of magnetic energy around sunspots. These emissions occur at random intervals and produce a range of different electromagnetic waves, including gamma, X-ray, and radio. When directed at Earth, the radiation particles in solar flares directly affect the ionosphere and have the potential to interfere with radio equipment and navigational satellites. Coronal mass ejections, or CMEs, are enormous bubbles of magnetic plasma that are released from the outer atmosphere, or corona, of the Sun. The plasma, also known as solar wind, is comprised of billions of tons of charged particles that travel through space at velocities close to the speed of light. The power of a strong coronal mass ejection can approach that of 1 billion hydrogen bombs. Coronal mass ejections are sometimes accompanied by solar flares, but a definitive link between the two events have not been established. After leaving the sun's atmosphere, it takes 20 to 30 hours after an Earth-directed major coronal mass ejection reaches our atmosphere. That's under 1 day, an event that has the potential to trigger a geomagnetic storm resulting in electrical power outages and the disruption of satellite television and radio communication. In 1859, the combined impact of a large solar flare and coronal mass ejection generated the largest recorded solar storm in the last 500 years during what became known as the Carrington event. The Carrington solar storm rendered telegraph systems worldwide inoperable and caused sparks to jump from communication equipment. March 13, 1989, another geomagnetic solar storm wreaked havoc with power grids in the Canadian province of Quebec and beyond, leaving 6 million people without any power for 9 hours. Large power transformers located in New Jersey even melted due to the influx of radiation. Over the course of a few hours, the relatively small flare had resulted in hundreds of millions of dollars in damage. In recent years, members of the scientific community have expressed their concerns over the potentially devastating results of a significant solar storm that we could have today. At a meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science just this year, leading scientific authorities representing NASA and NOAA warned that a solar storm directed at our planet could bring about, quote, a global Katrina, costing the world at least $2 trillion. The participants urged preparation for solar storms, noting an uptick in solar activity over the last year, a trend that they predict will peak in 2013. The clock is ticking. The group of scientists emphasized that our modern technology, increasingly dependent upon satellites, is far more vulnerable to geomagnetic storms than even a decade ago. A disruption to our satellites would prevent people from engaging in daily activities such as carrying out credit and card transactions, utilizing cell phones, and accessing the Internet. A discovery by NASA scientists in 2008 suggests the Earth's power grid is even more vulnerable to space weather than previously thought. Much to their surprise, NASA scientists found an enormous hole, four times the size of Earth, in our planet's magnetic field. Five NASA satellites recorded the density of the breach in the magnetic field at 90% less than what is normal. This discovery suggests that the Earth's power grids are even more susceptible to incoming solar flares and coronal mass ejections. In an interview with NASA Science News, Jim Rader, a physics professor at the University of New Hampshire, stated that this breach in the magnetic field allows, quote, the perfect sequence for a really big event, unquote. Speaking with National Geographic News, Daniel Baker, the University of Colorado's Laboratory for Atmospheric and Space Physics, said that a powerful storm, a solar storm, could effectively leave entire cities with no power for months or even years. He noted that the large transformers that would likely be blown out during a solar storm are in short supply, a fact that could lead to serious complications when trying to restore power. Baker is just one among a growing number of researchers in the field of astrophysics who have gone on their record stating that a solar storm on the scale of the 1859 Carrington event would dramatically compromise our global communication systems and fry all electrical power systems that it meets. In a phone interview for this report, Richard Lorden, senior technical executive for power delivery and utilization at the Electric Power Research Institute, was more optimistic in his assessment of the electrical grid's defenses during a coronal mass ejection. Lorden brought up that the modern power grid is highly interconnected and built with redundancies that protect against failure. Commenting on the research into the possibility of America's experiencing large-scale blackouts caused by space weather, he stated, quote, "We have not found that kind of vulnerability," unquote. Still, Lorden conceded that the nature of geomagnetic disturbances can be unpredictable and that, quote, "it is not reconciled how these transformers will respond." In other words, there's never been a major solar storm that's hit these systems, so how can they say with any certainty that they won't be affected? In an interview on the Progressive Radio Network, investigative journalist Lawrence Joseph spoke about a report from the National Academy of Sciences and NASA that was published in December 2008. The report concluded that a coronal mass ejection could leave up to 130 million Americans without electricity in North America alone. Such a lapse in access to electricity would deprive people of access to gasoline, refrigeration, as well as severely curtail the operations of law enforcement and the military. The consequences of an event would be profound, as millions of people would have very limited or no access to food or water. In addition, it would halt the operation of power plants that require electricity to run. That includes gas, coal, oil, and nuclear plants. One of the most immediate concerns in the event of a solar storm knocking out the electric grid is preventing the meltdown of nuclear reactors. Nuclear plants function through the process of nuclear fission. Just real quick on this. This process utilizes radioactive materials, such as uranium, to boil water at a very high temperature. This in turn creates steam to power turbines that generate electrical power. All the while, a constant stream of coolants is introduced via electrical pumps to prevent the radioactive fuel from overheating and melting the fuel rods. In most nuclear reactors, the pumps run on power from electrical grids that are not self-sustaining. Consequently, if the electric grid were to fail during a solar event, all of your cooling systems and nuclear plants would be unable to function. In such an emergency, nuclear power facilities will use backup generators and batteries to power the electric pumps. In most nuclear plants, the batteries last no more than one day, while the generators, usually fueled by diesel, will keep the system operational for another up to 72 hours. If the electric power grid is still not restored after the contingency power sources have been exhausted, a nuclear meltdown will absolutely occur. To safely shut down a nuclear reactor requires months of circulating coolant through the system. As it stands, virtually every one of the approximately 700 nuclear reactors or nuclear research facilities worldwide would be unable to execute a proper cool shutdown if the electric grid were to fail. It is therefore feasible that a considerable solar storm could trigger a series of devastating nuclear meltdowns across the world. The destructive nature of nuclear meltdowns was put on full display earlier this year after an 8.9 magnitude earthquake struck Japan on March 11th. Nuclear medical experts predict that the large quantities of radiation unleashed during the accident in Fukushima, all of which had been covered up by the Japanese government, will result in untold harm to humans and their generations to come. Reactor 3 at Fukushima, which was breached during the earthquake, contained plutonium. That is one of the most deadly contaminants on Earth. If even a tiny grain of plutonium is breathed in, it will cause so much damage to your DNA that cancer is almost a certainty. Japan's Nuclear and Industrial Safety Agency reported in August that the amount of cesium-137 that was leaked from the plant was 168 times greater than what was released during the dropping of the atomic bomb on Hiroshima in 1945. The amount of iodine-131, a radioactive isotope that was very damaging on the thyroid gland, was also found to be 2.5 times greater than what was measured after Hiroshima bomb. These statistics are a sobering reminder that the tragedy of Fukushima meltdown will become even more evident in the months and years ahead. The people who were and still are exposed to high levels of ionizing radiation emitted in the aftermath of the quake are almost certain, in my opinion, to develop cancers or other serious diseases, all because their government refused to evacuate them and tell them the truth. A report released by Russia's Federal Atomic Energy Agency last month reveals that the government has issued, quote, emergency notices to the directors of the country's nuclear power plants regarding the potential impact of solar storms. The agency's missive warns that space weather has the potential to cause, quote, massive blackouts, quote, spontaneous atomic explosions, and, quote, mentions that the worst events are still to come. The notice also references the need to prepare, especially considering the significant solar-induced blackouts that recently plunged large parts of Chile into darkness for many hours. A central challenge in preparing for solar storms is the protection of extra high voltage, or EHV, transformers. Around a third of the electric power generated in the United States comes from these 350 immense 100-ton transformers positioned at power substations across the country. In general, the higher the voltage running through the transformers, the more vulnerable they are to power surges induced by electromagnetic storms. The models utilized currently in the United States transmit voltages in the high range of 765 kV. Roughly 80% of America's power grids are relying upon 500 kV and 765 transformers. Only China possesses transformers that support higher voltages, some which can reach 1,000 kV. Now, there's currently 6 months to a two-year waiting list to purchase replacements for these electric transformers, which are manufactured in China and India. One of the industry's spokespersons, Lorden, put the cost of these transformers on the global market at $5 to $10 million. According to Lawrence Hecht of the publication 21st Century Science and Technology, quote, only one plant exists in the United States capable of manufacturing a transformer up to 345 kV. There's no manufacturing capability in the U.S. for 5765 transformers, unquote. Due to their size and complex nature, extra high voltage transformers are very difficult to repair and almost always require replacements. About half of all the transformers that are made break down during testing or prematurely malfunction after installation. Speaking to the Progressive Radio Network, Lorden also noted that the installation of these transformers is a lengthy process which takes a month to complete. So what do we do? Let us prepare for this. Despite attempts by some members of Congress to protect our electric grids against solar storms, lawmakers have been remarkably reluctant to address this matter in a meaningful way. In June of 2010, the House of Representatives voted unanimously in favor of the Grid Reliability and Infrastructure Defense Act, H.R. 5026, which was aimed at taking steps to protect the United States power grids from solar storms. Later last year, when it was introduced in the Senate, the bill was stripped of all references to protecting the power grids. House member Roscoe Bartlett of Maryland commented on the inaction by the Senate, saying, quote, while one part of the federal government was warning us of possible solar electromagnetic pulse damage to our electric grid, a key Senate commission approved the bill to ignore this threat, unquote. Even the steps taken by utility companies to protect electric infrastructure appear to be disproportionate to the stern warnings set forth by officials in the scientific community. Southern Company, a utility providing 4.5 million customers in southern United States, stated in an email, quote, Southern Company does not anticipate transmission issues on our system from the solar flares, geomagnetic disturbances, unquote. But went on to say that the company is working with the Electric Power Research Institute and North American Electric Reliability Corporation on studies to understand. I see, so let's just kick it down the road and definitely with another expert panel and delay it. A viable measure that could be taken to curb the effects of solar storms on our power grid is the installation of supplemental neutral resistors. According to the Meditech Corporation, a California-based company specializing in research into the effects of electromagnetic activity, these resistors would reduce the impact of electromagnetically induced power surges by 60 to 70%. A congressional estimate placed the cost of installing this equipment at $150 million. In preparation for difficulties with the electric grid associated with space weather, the Department of Homeland Security is funding the Electric Power Research Institute to develop a modular replacement transformer that will be tested, but not for several years. And several other innovators are pioneering technologies that would allow alternating currents to flow on cable lines while canceling out the effects of power surges from space weather. Many of these projects are simply in conceptual stages. A major focus for energy authorities tackling this issue is perfecting methods to monitor data on geomagnetic fluctuations along with changes in the power grid in real time. By measuring variables that could signal an approaching coronal mass ejection or solar flare, utility operations would be better prepared to protect the electric grid in the immediate lead-up to a geomagnetic disturbance. In an article in Solar Max, appearing in the Electric Power Research Institute's 2011 Spring Journal, David Budikoff outlined several protective measures. One, monitor systems voltage to anticipate the impact of increased reactive power consumption, and two, maximize reserves for additional power support. In conclusion, there are many other suggestions. But regarding nuclear reactors running on electric power, there are actions that can be taken to avoid a nuclear meltdown in the wake of a geomagnetic storm. One measure that could significantly decrease the threat of a meltdown is for each nuclear facility to stockpile sufficient amounts of diesel and backup generators and their parts that will allow for a secure, cool shutdown of the plant over the course of several months. And since the solar storm could radically hamper transportation of fuel and replacements and parts, it is imperative that at least a year's worth of materials and diesel be stored in ground at every single nuclear facility in the United States. That's doable. We could do that, but not unless we have a Manhattan Project mandate. All scientists on board and turn off Fox News. It would be completely against us, after all. If it wasn't born in their mind that it's legitimate, they then condemn it. They are so on the wrong side of history on this. An additional safeguard against meltdowns is the implementation of a closed-loop system wherein the electricity produced by the nuclear reactor is used to sustain the pumps that power the cooling system. This would ensure that the plant continued to function independent of the electric grid and make an emergency shutdown unnecessary. Several ongoing international projects are developing this technology, and a current joint venture between Russian and Italian scientists is aimed at creating a self-sustaining nuclear reactor known as Ignitor. Even though the implementation of these preventative measures might prove expensive, the alternative would be far more costly, both financially and in terms of human life. We face many obstacles in preparing our energy infrastructure for an inevitable effects of solar flares and coronal mass ejections. How can we not afford to do this? To sit back and wait? No. That means that we're watching Katrina again. This time, it could be bringing us to the verge of annihilation simply because we never chose to challenge the authorities and implement the necessary changes to our power grids. The time for preparation grows short, and while certain government agencies and interest groups have taken commendable steps in advocating preparedness, much more action needs to begin. I'm Gary Null. That is my original report. It will be posted with all the scientific reference. Now, one of the things we're going to do, and I expect you to be there to support this, is this Saturday, noon to 2, we're going to be in front of Governor Cuomo's office and supporting him in getting a mandate to force the federal government to close Indian Point. It's at 3rd Avenue and 41st Street. Bring signs. Bring placards. I will have people from the nuclear industry, anti-nuclear industry groups. I will be there. We will also be challenging the legitimacy of hydrofracking. We want to see hydrofracking stopped as well. Hydrofracking, if you're against it, be there. If you want to help preserve the future and be a part of a voice that rises up and lets them know, Wall Street won't finance nuclear. It's too difficult an issue for them, even. So we do not need a single nuclear power plant in the United States. And now it's time to tell President Obama and all the other people who put money in his pocket, enough. We the people have had enough. Close down every nuclear plant and start now. There's a clock ticking. Remember my worst-case scenario. That was not science fiction. That could be science fact. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Null. As I mentioned earlier, we're going to go to Albany right now and say hello to David Braun, who is up there to testify why he is opposed, and he's testifying on our behalf against, meaning us the people, against hydrofracking in New York State. David is helping to coordinate an anti-fracking effort, and also he will be at our rally on Saturday. Nice to have you with us, David.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
David, Real quick, could you go down maybe five or six things that are wrong with gas or with hydrofracking that the average public doesn't know, since there's an enormous multi-million-dollar campaign I see ads all the time of trying to show that gas hydrofracking is good, that it's safe?
Sure. Well, you know, I mean, let's be clear from the get-go and just say this is not our parents' natural gas. That this is, you know, conventional natural gas is drilled. You find a pocket of gas under the ground. You put a pipe down there. The gas comes up, and you got your gas. Now, this is a much more invasive process. They use about anywhere from 4 to 10 million gallons of fresh water that they take out of our water supply. They mix it with about 400,000 pounds of toxic chemicals on average, and they shove it into the ground, into these shale formations about a mile below the surface of the earth, to fracture these shale formations, which are millions and millions of years old, I think around 500 million years old, that have basically the natural gas trapped in these champagne bubbles in these shale formations, so that they literally fracture or cause these mini explosions or earthquakes in these shale formations to basically blow out these champagne bubbles of natural gas and then bring it to the surface. Now, what are the problems here? Well, the problems are that they're using all these toxic chemicals in the first place. I mean, they're talking about putting 77,000 wells into upstate New York alone if they're able to proceed with this practice. So in and of itself, you're looking to the equivalent of about 25 Empire State Buildings in terms of weight, the equivalent of 25 Empire State Buildings worth of toxic chemicals going straight into the ground in upstate New York. So that's problem number one, you know, because there's all sorts of problems. It finds pathways into our aquifers, into our lakes and our streams. But then the way in which the wastewater, about 20% of the water they put into the ground, actually comes up out of the ground. And where they've been doing this in Pennsylvania, last year about 66 million gallons of this wastewater just went completely missing, where the industry just cannot account for it. So the assumption is that it was dumped in lakes and streams. And in fact, just yesterday, I was reading an article about a place in Pennsylvania where one of the well operators was literally piping this toxic, radioactive, hazardous wastewater, directly into a stream. And of course the DEP in Pennsylvania had no idea about it, and that's because they're grossly understaffed. And you know, there's, when you got, you know, whatever they have, 29 or 39, different regulators, and you've got, you know, 8,000 wells as they do in Pennsylvania, there's no way they can really adequately oversee all of these chemicals and all of these potential problems. One other concern that I think is a very significant concern, for us, is that every 7,700 wells creates the air pollution of a Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. So that the state of Wyoming last year, where they're doing a considerable amount of drilling, actually had worse air quality than Los Angeles last year. Now, this is a state that has one person per capita per square mile. So how can a state like that get worse air quality? Well, it's all this drilling that releases ozone and all sorts of greenhouse gas and other terrible things.
David, my last question for you, because we got to run here, is what has been the impact of the testimony? Do you see that we're making any progress?
Well, you know, just up until now, basically what I've been hearing today is that the chairman of the DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, Joe Martens, was just basically being grilled by members of the assembly. And there was a full panel of members of the assembly, which were expressing concerns and basically pointing out all of the deficiencies within the document of the proposed regulations and the environmental impact statement. And you could see, notably, that at the end of the, you know, the hearing, or the time when Joe Martens had been speaking, that he was visibly rattled. That, you know, he's, if he hadn't realized before, hopefully he's getting a wake-up call now, that there's really no way to be doing this safely.
All right, then let's do this. We will wait till Saturday, and at Saturday, give us a flyer that we can have the people online through our social media contacts and broadcast contact the legislators in New York and the governor in New York and say no more hydrofracking and all the reasons why. All right?
Most certainly, and it United for Action, which is the organization that I work with as well, will be giving people the opportunity to provide comments on these DEC guidelines that they presented, so that they can actually step into the political process and express their concerns as well.
Okay.
It's very critical that we get as many comments, and I'll have more information about that on Saturday. So we appreciate it, and our general message is that enough of these crazy, extractive, toxic ways of gathering energy. General Electric, who's done considerable research on solar energy, is now telling us that within 5 years that solar power is going to be cheaper than energy created by fossil fuels. And so it's just categorically we need to switch towards renewable energies like solar energy that we know this information.
We need to
leave things like nuclear and gas behind.
David, thank you very much. I appreciate David Braun. He will be at the demonstration on Saturday, noon to 2, 3rd Avenue and 1st Street, 41st and 3rd in New York City. Please be there to show that you're against this nuclear disaster that is going to happen because of all the mistakes that everyone has made and all the assurances, because I see another Katrina, but 1,000 times worse. And also, on Saturday at 4 o'clock, I will be doing a one-off only discussion for about 2 hours on how you personally can survive the solar storms. I have some strategies for survival for those who are interested. And if you are, call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. In studio, Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello, Gary. Hello. I have a nice email here from a gentleman called Miguel Almeida Decker. He says, "Dear Mr. Null, thank you for your comments on the ego-based common culture and the objectification of the love object. This has been going on since the 60s and 70s self-gratification cults, which reached a new phase with the cult of Reagan and the mass crass materialism. These people act as a single globular amoebic mass. They say they act as individuals, but they actually behave only en masse as a mass entity. They never do anything alone or without a plan for generalized action. Now they clap at the mention of death at the hands of a governor on live TV. As for their perception of power, it's a defense mechanism to avoid being held accountable for their own acts of cruelty. I'd say that all fascist movements and organizations are small or large networks of coordinated collusion. At the levels of the individual, they function to lie as individuals, perpetuate any number of lies. In my opinion, the media is the automation of the process of integrative, coordinated fascism at the level of semiotics and the mass image. Thanks, Miguel."
Well stated. My generation of baby boomers must take at some point responsibility for what we have become today, because we cannot blame those who preceded us, because we have had the power. Look at all the major technocrats. Look at the people who run the banks, Wall Street, major industries. Look at the Bill Gates and his foundation in support of Monsanto and all the other people who are in power. Most of these are baby boomers. Now look at the Generation X and Generation Y and ask yourself, these younger people, those who are not connected and committed to higher ideals, where did they get their ideals? They didn't get them in a vacuum. We provided the format for them. All the work, little quality time with family, always going to hopefully get there, but never having the time. Something else was always more important. And then a kid's grown and out on their own. What lessons did they learn that will instill in them a sense of compassion, care, nurturing? Or did they watch their mother and father, maybe professionals, and think, I'm going to get mine now? It's unfortunate that we have not learned to stop and reflect and say, what did we create? Good and bad, because it was not all bad or all good. Because only then can we understand why people act the way they do today. I can't blame the young people, those at least who are young, for acting so often selfish. Forget the Wall Street deal. I'm happy people are coming out, irrespective of what ultimately happens. I say good for those who came out to protest and go to Wall Street and protest. All movements originally have some disorganization, some chaos, but from that you evolve, you know, some higher ideals, some focus, some discipline, and then get some mandated programs out that can actually make a difference, especially if you can enlist the other people who are your age and who support you, and hence becomes a national movement. But before that, before there was this talk on Wall Street, how many of these young people organized to stop their neighbor's home from being closed down? You look out the window, you see the marshals there, you see people you've known now packing up and leaving. Did they think it wouldn't happen to them? And how often did they buy stuff without thinking? Where was this made? Eating things, is this genetic engineered stuff? Shopping at a Walmart and buying things that once were made in their own town. So we've had this loss of consciousness about the meaning and purpose of things. We don't even know why we buy most of what we buy, but we're conditioned to need it. And then once we feel that we have it, we're no happier. That moment comes and goes. And we're back at searching outside of ourselves. Almost all of our efforts today are externalized. And that's why the media has so much power to influence us, because they control the messages, either a major network like NBC or another network. Look at all their programming. So much of their programming does not instill empowerment or reflection. So we must look at ourselves not unique, but look at ourselves as a part of a whole way of living thinking. And only then can we change. So for people who are making a step into change, even if it's not the best step, even if it's not always a sure step, good for them for making a step. I commend that. We must be patient, but we also must be honest. And if we're not able to be honest with being supportive, then we enable the next nonsense to occur in our society. I'd like to see all these unions, instead of down on Wall Street, you know, taking advantage of what they didn't have the courage or brains to do, to go down there and have a general boycott. Think of how you could close down Wall Street. Get rid of every person who works as a union person on Wall Street. Now, think who's going to be your security persons, who's going to do your work and deliver everything. Those are mainly union people, or people would be supportive of that. Think of what a general strike would be to our educational system, to close it down, all school teachers, until there's no more student debt. Think of what we could do to our healthcare system to close it down so there are no more unnecessary procedures, or those who need help are given help instead of being denied help, which could kill them. We have not had a sense of cooperative spirit coming from a more spiritual side, except in selected individuals and small groups. If people just show up because the media is there, that doesn't mean they're showing up with the integrity they need or something positive will come from it. More often than not, it's to co-opt people into their group, into their power structure, so they can control it. I can promise you, the unions wouldn't be down there unless they see a political gain and something they can exploit. Then I have to ask, how many of you sold out your union members supporting GATT and NAFTA? How many of you? I support unions. I don't support their leadership. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all very much for watching.
Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matthew Bogart. All shows are archived by Kyle Pollard. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Jason Tablefoe.